actually, frankly, far more similar to how we have K Street and Wall Street. It's starting to look more like that model in Mexico, which was never the case before. And because they don't have any reform for the electoral side of it.
We only have a couple minutes left. Okay. Tell me specifically what you and your organization advocate in terms of NAFTA 2.0, in terms of trade, immigration. What are you trying to get?
I think the most important thing is that we understand that there is a connection between globalization, trade, and immigration, and that we examine what our economic policies are. If we're truly interested in reducing immigration, then we need to examine what our economic policies are to ensure that that gets addressed. Second, I think it's critical that we do a sectoral by sectoral analysis and possibly even state by state in all three countries to see how the relationship is actually working, because I don't think people understand. It's hard.
And a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minutes past the hour, a little bit late getting started this evening. My sincere apologies to the affiliates down the line. See, that's what you say when you're in highfalutin, censored up, regulated, right-wing owned, buggy whip terrestrial radio. Our apologies to the affiliates down the line. The affiliates down the line are, of course, computers with no real human beings in them, because that's the goal, you know, take away the human beings. Remove the human beings from the process and just let the computer sit there and spew out right-wing filth into the public airwaves hour after hour after hour after day after day after days and weeks and months and years until you get this poor little benighted nation so absolutely discombobulated and sideways that it doesn't know which side is up anymore and couldn't pour pee out of a boot with directions on the heel. And guess what? It worked! That's why the horn exists. That's why every day and every evening, Guy James, Mark Levine, me, Peter Godbold, John Fox, on the weekends, Rick Goodner, horn psychologist, and Billy Shears, all bust a hump to bring you something that isn't right-wing dominated, right-wing owned, and right-wing corporatized. I think it's a pretty worthwhile endeavor, don't you? So tonight, it seems rather obvious this evening that we would, it's only appropriate probably to begin with the Admiral Fallon story. I was skeptical when Admiral Fallon was made head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, kind of wondering why you'd make an admiral a head of the Joint Chiefs when you're running a ground war in Asia. Oh, where's that Princess Bride line when I need it? Never get into a ground war with Asia, and never gamble with a Sicilian when the stakes are death. Or something like that. No, but Admiral Fallon got the boot today. There's really not a lot of curiosity as to whether he jumped or was pushed. This was a clear shove in the back. And it all has to do with an article in Esquire magazine. The title of that article, "The Man Between War and Peace." And the header on the article says, "The Bush administration wanted a war with Iran. The head of U.S. Central Command, Admiral William Fox Fallon, disagreed, and now, as of March 11th, Fallon has resigned." And I've been reading Esquire since about puberty. It's a generally a halfway decent magazine. You know, some silly talk show hosts don't have the common good sense to turn the ringer off. Just a moment, please. This'll only take a second. All better now, and you don't have to listen to that silly ringer. Well, somebody wants to jump in the middle of the opening blather, and you know what? I'm not going to make anybody wait on for me to sit and pontificate. I mean, why would I pontificate? I don't have the lace dress and the shoes and the House of Whoville hat with me anyway. It's not Wednesday. It's not prayer meeting. I'm not Bishop Bob right now. I'm just plain old Bob. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who've I got? All that for a dial tone. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, oh, we're off to a roaring good start this evening. I can just tell. But anyway, Esquire's a good magazine. They do some good writing. This particular article by Thomas P.M. Barnett. "If in the dying light of the Bush administration we go to war with Iran, it'll come down to one man. If we do not go to war with Iran, it will come down to the same man. He is that rarest of creatures in the Bush universe, the good cop on Iran and a man of strategic brilliance. His name is William Fallon, although all of his friends call him Fox," which was his fighter pilot call sign decades ago.
Fox, you got a bogey on yourself. Oh, God, dive.
You know, that kind of thing. 40 years into a military career that has seen this admiral rule over America's two most important combatant commands, Pacific Command and now United States Central Command, Barnett writes, "It's impossible to make this guy, as he likes to say, nervous in the service." So apparently, and you know how I am for a reference, you got to see the photo at this thing. EsquireMag.com/features. EsquireMag.com. You'll find the article. The photograph is brilliant because it is reminiscent of another photograph. If you gave this guy a big stogie, he would look very creepily similar to General Jack D. Ripper. You all remember who General Jack D. Ripper was, don't you? He's the Looney Tunes in the great great Stanley Kubrick film, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Love the War, or How I Love to Quit Worrying and Came to Love the Bomb, something like that. Yeah, it's
It's Jack. General Jack D. Ripper, who says stuff like this.
I don't know how well I could stand up under torture.
Well, of course, the answer to that is, well, no one ever does.
Yeah. That, and he says other really fun stuff like this. Oh, darn, got bitten by the... Sometimes they play and sometimes they don't. That's what makes all doing this on the fly so much fun. No, that one doesn't work either. Yeah, but, you know, this exchange.
No, I mean, when they tortured you, did you talk?
Well, I don't think they wanted me to talk, really. I don't think they wanted me to say anything. It was just their way of having a bit of fun, the swines.
Darn thing is, they make such good cameras. That's with that cigar clenched in his teeth. So the photograph is done black and white, and it makes Admiral Fallon look surprisingly like General Jack D. Ripper, which apparently is a little bit unfair because General Jack D. Ripper desperately wanted war to the point of being willing to start a thermonuclear holocaust. On the other hand, it from all appearances inside this article, Admiral Fallon was trying to keep Chicken George and Big Time Dick Cheney from starting a war with Iran. What America needs, Fallon says, this from the article, is, quote, a combination of strength and willingness to engage. Those are fighting words to your average neocon, not to mention your average supporter of Israel, a good many of whom in Washington seem never to have served a minute in uniform. But utter those words for print, and you can easily find yourself defending your indifference to nuclear holocaust. How does Fallon get away with so brazenly challenging his commander-in-chief? The answer is that he might not get away with it for much longer. President Bush is not accustomed to a subordinate who speaks his mind as freely as Fallon does, and the president may have had enough. Just as Fallon took over CENTCOM last spring, the White House was putting itself on a war footing with Iran. Almost instantly, Fallon began to calmly push back against what he saw as an ill-advised action. Over the course of 2007, Fallon's statements in the press grew increasingly dismissive of the possibility of war, creating serious friction with the White House. So Fallon, the good cop, may soon be unemployed because he's doing what a generation of young officers in the U.S. military are now openly complaining that their leaders didn't do on their behalf in the run-up to the war in Iraq. He's standing up to the commander-in-chief, whom he thinks is contemplating a strategically unsound war. Listen, I've just grabbed a couple of paragraphs here and there. Go read the whole thing after the show's over. Or read it now while I'm sitting here yammering away. This is, after all, interactive media, and you're not some yahoo toddling down the interstate hitting the scan button because you can't seem to find anything that's not an advertisement for a Swedish vacuum cleaner that picks up bowling balls with erectile dysfunction. Buy gold now! Look, this is internet radio. Be as multimedia as you want to. EsquireMag.com is the address for this article. Now, bear in mind, that's the truth of the matter. He got ditched for speaking his mind. Then, of course, there's Robert Gates, who apparently is showing up, did a press conference, and he's got some sort of a sling on. Am I seeing this photograph right? Because he's got a sling underneath his necktie. Better, it's a very, very tastefully done, I don't know, bandolero by Giorgio Armani or Versace or something. Who knows? So he gave a press conference today and explained it. No. He needs to spend more time with his family. Here we go.
This moment issuing a statement announcing that he's asked my approval to step down from his current duties as commander of U.S. Central Command and retire. Admiral Fallon advised me of his decision early this morning. He told me that, quote, the current embarrassing situation, public perception of differences between my views and administration policy, and the distraction this causes from the mission, make this the right thing to do, unquote. I have approved Admiral Fallon's request to retire with reluctance and regret. Effective March 30th.
Now, this, remember, Robert Gates was the president of Texas A&M University. He got his job by virtue of whoring his university out to house the George H.W. Bush Presidential Library. I mean, this is Texas A&M, after all. They could barely beat the Baylor Baptists. There's not much likelihood Gates is going to beat the Baghdad Baptists. I accepted his resignation with reservations and misgivings, and gosh darn, I'm just so sad. If I could reach my hanky, but I can't because I got this sling on. See, don't you have some sympathy for me? Well, somebody has to love me best.
First, Lieutenant General Martin Dempsey, Deputy Commander of U.S. Central Command.
Oh, and by the way, I screwed up. I said Joint Chiefs. This guy's CENTCOM. So, you know, my bad.
Will serve as acting commander.
And I'm sure that that guy, if he's getting the acting commander gig, he must be a real live lickspittle.
Sir, there was a line in that Esquire story that said that basically if Fallon gets fired, it means we're going to war with Iran. Can you just address that?
Well, that's just ridiculous.
Is it? Is it? I seem to recall somebody somewhere along the way saying that it was ridiculous that a decision had already been made to go to war with Iraq. Do you remember that? I remember that. I'm pretty sure that wasn't during one of my crack pipe moments. Let's see. Admiral Fallon opposed the surge in Iraq, and it has been a constant battle for Admiral Fallon to avoid bombing Iran. The warmongering that goes on in the administration, he called not helpful. This isn't helpful. And he rejected the praise in the Esquire piece, calling it poison pen stuff. And yet, the thing is, the Esquire magazine article was written and it has quotes from him in it. He participated. And yeah, it does have a line in it that essentially says, if Fallon gets canned, the bombs are going to rain on Iran. Now, who do you believe? Robert Gates sitting here who can't seem to look any of the reporters in the eye? Or someone who, after talking to Fallon, reaches that conclusion? That as long as Fallon is in position, war with Iran is less than likely. But that if Fallon is gotten out of the way, well, Katie bombed the door.
It's ridiculous.
Last question.
You said in your opening statement that this was an embarrassing situation. Admiral Fallon said it was an embarrassing situation. Doesn't that Esquire article and that one line open you up for even more criticism? The notion that this does signal the beginning of an opening for war?
Well, I am presented with dealing with Admiral Fallon's decision. And as I say, I think it's the right decision.
Why was it the right decision there, Bob? Was it the right decision because your boss is so absolutely stunningly dedicated to the idea of raining more death on more people in more areas of that pathetic, benighted region? Is that why? Maybe, yeah.
As I say, the notion that this decision portends anything in terms of a change in Iran policy is, to quote myself, ridiculous. Thank you.
And then the big old grin, like a fox eating poop out of a wire brush, and he walks off the stage, sort of shuffling along with his tastefully applied sling over his arm. statement came out from that ramrod straight iron backboned Senate Majority Leader a little bit ago. Harry Reid issued a statement. He said, "I am concerned that the resignation of Admiral William J. Fallon, commander of all U.S. You know, you can almost see him flinching as he's dictating it. Commander of all U.S. forces in the Middle East and a military leader with more than three decades of command experience is yet another example that independence and the frank, open airing of experts' views are not welcomed in this administration." Jesus, George, don't hit me! He's going to hit me again. I hate it when he hits me. Why can't he love me? I do everything he wants. Please, George, don't hit me again. This is all detailed over at thinkprogress.org. They note that Spencer Ackerman writes, "Gates said in a press conference just now that no one should think that the move reflects any substantive change in policy. That sure won't be how Tehran sees it. The Iranians will consider Fallon's resignation to indicate that the bombing begins in the next 5 minutes." Well, you know, this is the time for rolling out wars, isn't it? Why, it was just 5 short years ago, wasn't it? Just 5 short years ago that we were told that the citizens of Baghdad and Iraq in general and the region as a whole would be shocked and awed as hell and fire and lightning and death rained from the sky, fell from the sky, brought to you by the United States of America. This couldn't even, oh goodness me, couldn't even wait till April, and April is the cruelest month. These rotten bastards are going to start another war, and I'm sure that Harry Reid will issue a statement saying, "I am concerned that we have bombed another country over there in that region of the..." Oh, God, I think he's going to kick me. He's raging. He's pulling his leg back like he's going to kick me. He kicks me all the time. I hate it when he kicks me. George, let me lick your foot. Don't kick me, George! Again. Well, I mean, is there any point in trying to tell a gutless little lump of jello like Harry Reid that we wouldn't even have to be talking about this if he would have done his constitutional duty and at least signaled to the House of Representatives that he would shepherd a bill of impeachment through the Senate and tried George Bush had such a bill been presented? Is that just crazy talk? I'm not trying to get anybody stirred up. If anybody's stirred up here, I'm the one who's stirred up. Really, I'm not kidding. I'm sort of sick right now. I'm sort of disgusted. And yeah, far more than anything that Osama bin Laden has ever done, I'm terrified. I genuinely am terrified. Because we keep slouching toward, and I hate to use the phrase, but you know, it's those horses' asses who want it so badly. We keep slouching toward Armageddon.
That crazy little bastard, he's involved your poor father in something.
And mother, and aunts, and uncles and cousins, and brothers and sisters, and neighbors and friends and classmates. because there's every reason in the world to believe, especially since Robert Gates said that's ridiculous, that the plans are in motion to rain hell and death and damnation on shopkeepers in Tehran and men who sell flowers from carts and ice cream in the warm weather, on pharmacists and people who pump gas, and clerks and typists, on lawyers and doctors, on engineers, on peasants in their fields. There is every reason to believe that the Bush administration, egged on, of course, by its other allies, I'm sorry for the pregnant pauses that you could drive a truck through. And I'm I hope you know me by now that I'm not some sort of nervous Nelly that just around. Oh God, they're doing it. But I sort of looked up and realized, yeah, it's March. It's anniversary time. God, I remember a time when March Madness meant several ongoing days of blissful immersion in some really top-notch college basketball. But now, in Bushmerica, March Madness means real, live, genuine, sure enough, crazier than a sprayed roach insanity. March Madness means that it's the time for wars to get born. March Madness means it's time for mothers to learn to grieve. March Madness means it's time for fathers to learn to curse the day their children were born to be slaughtered for no good reason. March Madness means that we have all gone mad. The guy was right. Yeah, Tehran is going to interpret this as a step toward war. And why shouldn't they? George Bush beats that drum constantly, and Fallon was right. It isn't helpful. I only wish that Fallon had been a little bit more of a man about his resignation and told the truth. But nobody wants to talk about the naked emperor, do they? Where is our modern Paul Revere? Where are the lamps hanging in the old North Church? Where is the patriot screaming at the top of his lungs as he goes riding out? The neocons are coming. The neocons are coming. The neocons are coming! A friend said to me the other day that the perfect definition of a neocon is an intellectual inbred. That they come up with one of their genius ideas and somebody else says, ah, it's a genius idea. And then somebody else says, hey, did you hear? He said it was a genius idea that so-and-so had that. And the third neocon says, those guys are geniuses. And the fourth neocon says, those three, they're geniuses. Intellectual inbreds. And I responded, yeah. Only problem is they got B-1 bombers for banjos. 50-yard line seats for the apocalypse. You know, stupid us, we talked a little bit last night about how that Washington Post article indicates that the scientists are saying things are a hell of a lot graver on this little blue-green marble time machine hurtling through the universe than we might have previously suggested. Graver, that is, for humankind. that if we don't stop carbon emissions altogether inside of 50 years, we can cancel Christmas for good. And I had the ignorant, dumber than a bag of hammers temerity to suggest that, you know, we need something like a television show that can show America alternate visions of what the world looks like, sounds like, is like in 100 years. One, with no attempt to stop carbon emissions, and two, with a concerted attempt to do what must be done. Stupid, stupid radio host, stupid! Because if these bloodthirsty punks get their way, there's no sense in worrying about what the world looks like in 50 years or what the world looks like in 100 years, because the only thing doing the viewing of what the world looks like will be cockroaches, because these bloody bastards are hell-bent on a nuclear holocaust that we get to start. God Almighty. And somebody who can't keep their damned eye on the ball in the chat room wants to talk about the bombing. Oh, Jesus Christ. Let's go to the phones before I lose my temper. Hey, who have I got?
Hey, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
I'm sorry I didn't get the first of your show. I was having to wait for somebody to come, and they were late coming. So I heard a little bit of what you were talking about, something to do with Iran.
Yeah. The guy who was standing between the imminent bombing of Iran was forced out today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to tell you something that I heard on the news down here today, on the TV news, local TV news.
Okay.
What caught my attention was that they said probably our utility rates, our electric rates were going to go up.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, okay, I'll just check it out. And what it is, and I wrote the name of the company down, but I can't find it now, but they've already got plans, big plans, to build a nuclear plant down here. They showed the artistic drawing of it, and it's huge. And we're going to have, and they actually said we would have to pay for it. We, the people, would have to pay for it. It's not exactly approved, but I'm sure it's, you know, I don't know what could be done about it. But the thing is huge. I was hoping Guy would be on today. I wanted to see if he knew about it.
Yeah. Sadly, he got caught out and couldn't get back to the studio in time.
Yeah. But I've been thinking about y'all up there with all that thing you're going through. And, you know, Obama's saying he wants to make a Saudi Arabia out of you. And we got all this sunshine. And they're talking about how many jobs it'll be, you know, and... But I wish I could find the name of the company, see if you've ever heard of them. But they're, I looked up on the web, and they're supposed to do alternative energy, too. I guess their alternative is nuclear. But that, to me, is a sad thing. I mean, not just the, I wouldn't even mind paying extra taxes for solar. But not for nuclear. I mean, not taxes, but extra on the light bill for solar, but not for nuclear.
I don't know what you're going to get in Florida, Juanita, because the nuclear plants are already there, so naturally they're going to go to the Public Service Commission and hang it on you.
Yeah, actually, that's what they're
saying. That's what they always do. And whether it's nuclear or coal-fired or whatever, it's always they're failing. Their inability to maintain their own facilities are always hung on the people who have to pay the bills. because God knows we couldn't ask the shareholders or maybe the CEO to cough up the cost. Oh, no, yeah. Well, that'd be wrong.
They got a ton of people on their board. It's a big company. They're all over the country, I believe, and I was trying to see if they were connected with somebody, and I wish maybe I'll find it sometime. That's kind of bad.
Well, it's not kind of bad. It's kind of a great big honking ripoff, Juanita.
Like a what?
It's a big old ripoff. You're getting ripped off.
Oh, yeah, of course. And we don't have a blessed thing to say about it.
No. If you want to keep the lights on, you'll have to pay the increase there through the Public Service Commission will, in its classic servile fashion, accede to. Because, you know, the power company holds all the cards now, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. And that's my biggest expense as far as utilities go. That's my biggest. And it doesn't seem anything that you do makes any difference, you know, that, you know, try to cut down or anything.
Right.
No matter what.
I know. Listen, they don't want you cutting down. They want you burning more and more and more because that's how they make their money.
Mm-hmm.
Because once again, the idea of a public service commission is to regulate industries that are critical to human life, like, you know, power, light, water, that kind of thing. But what they wind up being, especially in southern states, but not entirely, is rubber stamps for companies to rape the consumer. And that's what you're seeing.
We already have nuclear power down here?
The big power outage that you had down there was because of failures at a nuke plant. 5 reactors went offline and Florida went into the dark.
Oh, that was the other night?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Sure.
Well, I do know that we've got a place, you know, when they were talking about shipping all the waste, the nuclear waste out to Nevada and how safe it was, airtight cans and all. I found out that we have some kind of nuclear waste down here, not too far from where I live. You could look up and see how far there was a place, and I was shocked to find out that there was a place within 30 miles of here.
Yeah, remember not to go hiking there, will you? You know, and don't fish in the nuclear lake. You'll pull out something with 8 eyes.
We got all those phosphate lakes down here too. They mine the phosphate down here. We had a lot of sandy hills around, and of course there wasn't anything like y'all had. But they did finally fix a lot of them up, and a lot of people fish in them. But the fish is, not that good.
No, I'll take a pass on the fish fry from the phosphate lakes, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the hush puppies cooked in the motor oil, not so much on that either.
I'll tell you, we're no telling what we're getting to eat. It's just something else. I just wanted to tell you about that. I've been really concerned about y'all, your situation. I was thinking about calling someplace and seeing if it had any contact with Obama.
I was talking with Mark Levine earlier today, and he pointed out something to me that was rather significant. Our little primary here in West Virginia is the only primary that happens on that day. And there's no primary a week before it, and I don't think there's a primary a week after it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that should provide ample opportunity for the candidates to come here. And if they do, somebody, I hope, will get to ask them squarely.
Right.
How do you feel about people? How do you feel about people having their kidneys burned up and urinating blood for the profit? Yeah. For the profit motive of a coal company CEO.
Right. And, Bush has allowed them to do it closer and closer to people's homes, too, and closer to rivers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's no surprise, is it?
Not at all.
If there's anything that's wrong or evil, he'll do it. You know? And people be damned.
Sure. It's not just Don Blankenship at Massey. It's the other companies too. There's more into it than that. They just happen to do more of it than anybody else. But you know, this Saudi Arabia of coal business is all about liquid coal technology, which is a hoodoo, which is a con. It's a dodge. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest fraud that's been palmed off on a credulous public and government.
Yeah.
Probably since the Gulf of Tonkin resolution or the Iraq War resolution. And, you know, we'll just, somebody will ask him that question. Personally, I hope that someone offers Barack Obama a flyover so he can see the start that we've already gotten on the Saudi Arabia of coal.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, I bet you Larry Gibson would be really, really happy to welcome him to Caford Mountain and let him look out over that hell and damnation and destruction say, well, here's your Saudi Arabia of coal, Senator. How you liking it? Because I think the man's intelligent enough to learn. You know, he's not like McCain. McCain's dumber than a post. Barack Obama can learn, and if Barack Obama meets the people that are directly impacted by this stuff that he thinks is so groovy, then maybe he'll learn. I'm hoping so. I'm just hoping so.
Yeah, I am too.
Because I want some of that hope and some of that change that he's promising the rest of the nation.
Right. Yeah, right.
But as long as we're going to be the Saudi Arabia of coal, there's not just a whole lot of hope or a whole lot of change coming.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty wild. I'll say that's, he didn't know what he was saying.
Well, no. See, please understand. I'm probably, me and the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch and some of the other environmental organizations, we're the only ones that are horrified by that. The rest of them, does that mean we're going to get to wear bed sheets? We ain't got to wear bed sheets, do we, Senator? And meanwhile, there's a whole bunch of people going, well, I'm not voting for him, no how. I mean, we got some racism here, okay? Uh-huh. And we got some people, well, I'm going to vote for McCain because he lacks guns.
He what?
Lacks guns.
Oh, lots of guns. Oh, gee. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, Juanita, hang in there, dear, and keep us posted, would you?
Okay.
All right. Talk to you later.
Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye. And onward. Hi, who have I got?
I'm here.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, one thing, if Juanita wants some ammunition on how to maybe slow down the nuclear thing in her state, tell her to Google WPPSS, otherwise known as the Washington Public Power Supply System. We called it WHOOPS because they managed to build the public in Washington out of billions. It was supposed to be a deal where they built a bunch of nuclear plants, none of which got built. Well, wait a minute, I think one did. But the rest of them never got built. They defaulted on their bonds. And people in one county who had electric bills of under $100 went to close to $1,000 a month.
Yeah, well, I saw the region where I grew up, geez, language moment, go from the cheapest electricity in the United States to some of the most expensive because of a foolhardy desire to start building nuclear plants inside the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Yeah. Have her check out, you know, Juanita, if you can hear me, Google WHOOPS, WPPSS. And it's a blueprint on how to get yourself screwed over and use it. The reason I called in is because what you were talking about earlier, Fallon.
Yeah.
I'm sure you thought of it, but I wonder how many other people have. The minute he bombs Iran,
mm-hmm.
Guess who goes into the meat grinder?
The Navy?
No, not just the Navy. All those hundreds of thousands of troops that are sitting in Iraq.
Oh, you mean when the Iranians pour across the Iraqi border?
Well, not to mention that, but all of their allies, what are they? Let me see. Are they Iranian Sunni or Shia?
Shia.
Okay. All of the Shia who are so far holding back.
Yeah, and what's his name? Sadr and his Mahdi army.
Masada al-Sadr, yeah. All he's got to do is say, get him. We won't have a prayer.
I keep asking myself, are they that stupid? Do they really not see any of this stuff? Or have they played some war game with some Kobayashi Maru solution where, you know, they cheat and they win?
I'm kind of wondering if it has... I can just picture Bush saying, you know, when they tell him, but this is going to happen and this is going to happen, and Bush turning around and saying, no, it's not. I'm going to go into God mode and I'm going to win. Oh, God.
Yeah, well, that's not too hard for me to believe. I know. But, you know, it hasn't happened yet, so maybe we're overreacting. But
I wonder, what would a mail and phone campaign to the UN do? Saying, please, stop this maniac!
Well, I'm sure there will be a sternly worded statement from Harry Reid.
Well, what I think about Harry Reid is neither printable nor usable in mixed company. He needs to go. He needs to go home and stay there.
Oh, God. So, you know, just kind of grab your boots and hold on tight, because the ride may get a little bumpy, as they say.
Yeah. Fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a bumpy night. Rick keeps playing that Spina Crack commercial on his show. If I could figure out a way to send an audio clip to Harry Reid, I would. I could send him that. I did do one thing, and the guy said, I don't know whether or not he's going to actually do it, but I did do one thing. I called up my Congress critter, and I told him, grow some balls, big brass ones. He said he was going to put that down. He said he was going to say exactly that when he gave him the message. I don't know whether or not he's going to, but I did.
Well, remains to be seen.
Hmm? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I said it all just sort of remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just... scream at your Congress critters. I guess that's all we can do.
And but you know what? That it's got to be raised to a din. And this time through... it might actually be time for the anti-war crowd to get serious, you know, but we've talked about this before, and I don't know why I'm wasting time on it. The anti-war movement, you know, what happens if the bombing of Iran starts? Do we go get our signs and go to Washington D.C. for a Saturday and then all leave again?
It won't matter by that time. When they start bombing Iran, that sets off World War III. Iran's got a really, really big ally. It's called Russia.
I think they'll stay out of it and watch us sort of unmake our own bed like we did with them in Afghanistan. The Russians are giggling all the way to the bank at this point in time.
Oh, yeah. They're laughing themselves silly. And so are the Germans. You know, Reagan and Bush, they all basically lorded it over the Germans, you know, tried to tell them how to run their economy, and the Germans told them, bugger off. Well, guess what? One of the few economies in Europe that's not tanking is Germany, because they didn't follow our model. they're laughing all the way back.
Because, you know, what was that old thing about the United States will never fall from external pressure, will rot from the inside? This doesn't bode well. You can actually take history, Susan.
Oh, yeah.
And you can... I've been reading in some classics and stuff lately. You can make an argument that the ancient Greeks of the time of Alexander were in a position that we think the so-called Muslim terrorists are in today, because you had a stable Middle East administered by the Persians, which was the greatest and mightiest state of its day, which little by little was picked apart by the Greeks.
Yeah.
A little bit here, a little bit there, and it takes a couple of hundred years when you have your Thermopylae and you have your Marathon, and eventually you get the Macedonian Greeks crossing the Hellespont into Asia, and they take the Persian Empire down as a piece.
Yep. And all it takes is patience. Bush is shock and awe. All we did was sow the whirlwind.
Yeah, and you reap it too. You reap it too.
Yeah. And they are nothing if not patient. We will be getting blowback from that shock and awe.
Well, there's that word, blowback. You know, all you got to do is say blowback to a right winger, and they just come all kinds of unglued.
Hey, you hate the troops. Blowback. What do you mean? What do you mean? 9/11 was our fault.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, learn a little more on. Like I said, neocons, intellectual inbreds.
Equal idiot.
Susan, have a good evening.
You too. Love to Agnes.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We don't, with our puny little, at best, 72-year average lifespans, we don't have the ability to see the long view. All we have to do to teach us the long view is history. And history has example after example after example of overbearing, hubristic nations bringing themselves to their own knees by virtue of stupid urges toward war. Whether it was the Persia of Alexander's day, or before Alexander, the Greeks of the Athenian democracy. The Athenian democracy tore itself down with its adventures in Syracuse and the Peloponnesian War, a war that was utterly uncalled for. And then, this, that, and the other in the Roman Empire, the collapse of the Republic by virtue of the the tremendous powers that were first given to Pompey and then to Julius Caesar. The examples are there, and we are sadly lacking in people who are willing to even admit that any of them might be examples. In a word, it's like we're in some sort of free fall. Natural laws don't apply anymore. It's as if all the things that you expected to sort of run the world don't make the world go anymore. What did John and Bruce used to refer to that as on Fourth Estate? Opposite world? a world where down is up, black is white, night is day. We very well may be inside that world. Some of us see it. Others don't. And of course, it's one thing to learn from the past, it's another one to live there. If you live in it, you're not going to learn from it. You gotta be in the moment. You gotta be in the present. You've gotta make it make sense in the present. That's why looking, for instance, at the fall of Persia from the perspective, you know, if you want to make that comparison, the United States is Persia. The people in the place of the ancient Greeks are the so-called Muslim fanatics. Because the ancient Greeks were deemed fanatics in their day, too. And for a time, the Persians managed to keep them bought off with a coin that was called a daric. And they pauperized themselves, buying them off, until they weakened themselves to the point that they couldn't win a damn battle. And it could well be, that if we're not careful, that's where we're going to wind up to. Because, pardon me, yeah, I know the stock market went up 400 points today. Whee. It'll go back down tomorrow. It's still in a net loss mode.
Greatest gain since 2002.
Well, how about the losses? How the losses been going? Because it won't sustain that. And we've got bad paper hung all over China and most of the rest of the world, supporting an occupation that we've got no business in. So there you go. So we'll take a little break. That's the close of the first hour. God knows there's a lot of other stuff, too. And we'll try to get to all of it right here on America's listener-supported liberal voice, right here on the Horn.
Come quick, and that's when a small one. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Love that song. Drive-by truckers. Oh, by the way, for those of you who are up late-ish, the truckers are going to be on Conan O'Brien tonight. I'm sure they'll be playing something from their new album, Brighter Than Creation Stars. If I could get it at television at that time, I would certainly be in there to watch. As it stands, I'll just wait and see it when it pops up on YouTube, because you know it will. And that's what you can do if you're listening to horn programming at the time. That's what YouTube's for. There's a lot of great songs on Brighter Than Creation Stark. It really is an amazing, amazing piece of work. And I'm not familiar enough with Conan the Librarian's, or Conan O'Brien's program to know exactly when he brings his musical guests on. I guess it's usually at the end. So, you know, I'm guessing that's where the truckers will fall. But they don't, you know, those guys don't mail it in. They'll be there. And they'll pack a wallop. So that's, you know, whatever time Conan comes on, you get the truckers tonight. So it's actually worth the effort. I want to sort of pull back a little bit. You know, we talk about idiots starting wars, and the absence of perspective that the poor fools suffer in starting them. And when we talk about wars, of course, the presumption inside any discussion of warfare is not the officers, but the aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and cousins and nieces and nephews and mothers and fathers and friends and neighbors who actually do the fighting. And there's a handful of stories out there in the last couple of days that don't bode well for our ability to fight any more wars, because we don't seem able to get it quite right. Let's see. First of all, there's veterans' benefits. You know, one of the big selling points of joining the military is, you know, we'll take care of you after you're gone, or after you're done. Of course, with the Walter Reed scandal and the shutdown of the traumatic brain injury section at the all of that, and the fact that Disney is teaching Walter Reed how to deal with its guests, doesn't bode well. And frankly, something's got to be done about veterans' benefits and veterans' affairs. But I tell you what, as God is my witness, this is not the way to do it. It turns out that there has been a move afoot, and it's the right thing to do, to pay pensions to Filipinos who fought side by side with American soldiers during the Second World War. And up until recently, there's been no doubt but what that was the right thing to do. It's sponsored by Hawaii, one of Hawaii's senators, Senator Akaka's S-1315. It passed the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee last year, and it would have given pensions to Filipino veterans who served alongside U.S. troops in World War II. Those living outside the U.S. would receive up to $4,500 a year. My God, $4,500 a year, if they were married. If they were single or widowed, $3,600 a year. Talk about hair splitting on a truly sickening scale. Under the plan, the pensions for Filipino World War II veterans was supposed to begin on May the 1st. Once it passed the Veterans Affairs Committee, it got delayed because there are actually senators in the United States Senate who opposed that puny and yet good-hearted gesture. Senator Richard Burr, a Republican, of course, of North Carolina, described the pensions as being wrong and costly. It's wrong because it takes money from American veterans and sends it to the Philippines to create a special pension for non-citizen, non-resident Filipino veterans with no service-connected disabilities. What a sick bastard. Maybe Mr. Burr would like to find some American veterans who were damned glad to have those Filipino fighters right by their sides when it counted the most. Senator Akaka said these veterans have been denied these benefits for over 50 years. I believe it's time to give these elderly veterans the benefits that they earned and so richly deserved. In the 62 years since the end of the Second World War, Filipino veterans have worked tirelessly to secure the veteran status they were promised. They were promised! You remember MacArthur, right? I mean, you read something about him somewhere along the way. He made promises on behalf of the United States government in order to secure the services of those Filipino fighters. To secure the veteran status they were promised, when they agreed to fight under U.S. command during World War II. See, it's not like they were just some sort of free agent guerrilla fighters. They were actively commanded by American staff. And we have welched on that debt, and we have weaseled on that debt, and Senator Akaka is trying to make the United States government finally honor its obligations to World War II veterans. All that Senator Burr can say is that it's wrong and costly to pay those little brown men. Yeah, because it takes money from American veterans and sends it to the Philippines. Senator Burr, you hateful bastard, are you telling me that the United States of America has reached a point in its existence when we cannot, as they say, chew gum and walk at the same time? Where we have to stab Second World War veterans in the back in order to honor the commitments that we have to returning Iraq veterans? Is that where we are, Senator Burr? We can't do both. We can afford a war that's going to cost, by the time, if it ever ends, or in the next couple of years, the toll on the Iraqupation will reach something approaching $6 trillion. And we can't afford $4,000 a month for an 82-year-old man living on Luzon. Is that where we are, Senator Burr? Is that the America that we live in now? Because if you say yes, that it is, that we can't honor the obligations that we made, then you know what, Senator Burr? Far more than any military defeat in the field, things like this show that we are morally and ethically defeated, that we're dead, we're done for, we're bust. The story that I'm looking at from Army Times begins, "The top Republican in the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee proposes jump-starting a stalled veterans benefits bill by reducing a promised pension for World War II Filipino veterans and using the money to improve benefits for combat veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan." I got a better idea. What do you say we honor our old obligations and actually take seriously what it's going to mean to take care of returning veterans on the next war? You see, this is all a failure of planning. Remember, we were going to be greeted as liberators? Oh, it might last 6 days. Well, it was Rumsfeld, right? 6 days, 6 months, 6 weeks. It's certainly not 6 months. Remember? As of this month's anniversary, we will have started on year six. Year six. And had no clue whatsoever of what we were going to be subjecting those soldiers to. Now, let's not have people waiting on hold. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Yeah, I have a bit of information on that veterans thing.
Yeah.
I have a relative, and it's a similar case from another country. I have relatives who commanded Gurkhas through the British Army, Northern India.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the Gurkhas?
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar. Ferocious fighters.
Yeah, and eventually, what can be done if you get a direct sentence, direct descendants from the commanding officer and have them petition the leadership, because that's what happened in Britain.
But Britain honored its obligations, right?
Yeah. Eventually, you know, Parliament broke in, gave the Gurkhas their just due.
Well, see, I don't think as long as there are dishonorable slugs like Burr from North Carolina, Kevin, we're not going to honor those obligations. That's the thing, the idea, this either-or thing, that we'll make a value judgment about the service of a Filipino man in 1944 as compared to a young soldier returning shattered from Iraq in 2008. You can't balance those two off against each other.
They're equally valuable.
They are equally valid, and they both, at their given time, served with honor and with dignity.
Okay, and the thing is, my relatives who did write those letters are living in the former colonies, like Canada, Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up going that far.
That's amazing. The stories like this are heartbreaking to me because it shows me just exactly what scum the Republican Party thinks our veterans are.
Yeah,
I mean we're talking about penny pinching where it concerns the actual people who fought the war and need the help. Oh, we don't penny pinch on Halliburton. We send 18 tractor trailer truckloads of shrink wrapped $100 bills to Iraq, Kevin. And we don't even know when we lose $9 billion. It's just gone. Just disappeared. We lose guns. We lose ammunition. We don't even track it. We don't even keep an eye on it. So that now the very bullets that were stolen are and the explosives are used to kill our people. But by God, if a Filipino veteran who laid his life on the line 62 years ago, if that man's going to get $4,000 a month until he dies sometime in the next 5 or 6 years, well, we have a crisis on our hands.
Yeah.
And that's why I hate these people so much.
Well, I do too. You know, I think this is unfortunately America for you, with our current leadership, or that's been running this country for the past 30 years.
Yeah. Well, look, this thing's held up in the House as well, because there are House Republicans who don't think that Filipino veterans are worth $4,000 a month.
Jack Kingston is one of them.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, yeah. Oh, the guy who wants everybody to wear a flag pin but can't remember to wear his own.
Yeah.
That goon from Georgia.
Yeah. Who likes pronouncing people by all three of their names?
Yeah. That's Peter King. Yeah, him too.
Yeah.
Yeah, who wants to make sure we always say Barack Hussein Obama?
Yeah.
Did you catch his justification for that? Well, we have to do that because, you know, it's going to send a significant message to people in the Middle East. They're going to think he's Muslim, no matter how many times he says he isn't. I get Excedrin headache number 623, and it just feels like it starts right between my eyes and goes back over the top of my skull when I think about things like that. But I guess I'm just crazy that way.
I just want to add that information there. If you're, like, forever who is out on the air and whoever has a direct descendant, like a commanding officer or a veteran or whatever, served alongside them, if their children or grandchildren write letters to the congressman demanding it.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. And, you would hope that people will. But the idea that this, like I said, what gets all over me is that this Burr creep would pit one against the other, especially when they worship at the altar of the soldier, supposedly.
Yeah, well, that's your Dixiecrat senator for you, sir. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. So it'll probably Akaka, and this is the sad part. Akaka has said he opposes Burr's "screw the Filipinos" measure, but he said that he might be willing.
What's his name? Who lost, right?
Huh?
Makaka? Who's Makaka?
Akaka. It's Daniel Inouye.
Senator from Hawaii.
Yeah, Akaka.
Oh, okay.
He said.
You're talking about what's in the North?
No, George Allen. No. He's gone. No, Akaka.
Yeah, I was like, where did he come from?
No, Akaka. It's Akaka's bill to provide compensation for the Filipino veterans. And the sad thing is, he said that he disapproves of the bill, but he might be willing to allow a vote on it if other senators agree.
Yeah. Well, you got to understand the difficult position he's in. He's Japanese American.
Yeah, and he's, I think he served honorably, as did Inoue.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of like, and I kind of understand his rationale. Because you have to understand, once you have a senator like Byrd or a couple of congressmen, they'll pull anything out of their behinds for a race card.
Well, I'm not saying Byrd. I said Burr. This is Burr of North Carolina, another hateful right winger.
Burr? Oh, I thought you meant Byrd.
No. Burr. B-U-R-R.
Oh. Sorry.
But no, Burr is actually probably sleazier than Byrd by a long shot. The so-called, it goes on and on. There's an organization called the Wounded Warrior Project, and they're all for Burr's so-called compromise.
Oh,
yeah. You know, they're willing to put the shaft to the Filipino veterans. But, you know, what the heck? If we can just keep it laying around stalled in Congress for a while, they'll all die off anyway. That's the thing. Yeah. We're not talking about a whole lot of people here.
Yeah. I mean, the more they're about 30, 40.
I don't know. Maybe there's 1,000. Maybe there's 2,000. But, you know, do the math. 4,000 a month times 2,000 people.
Yeah, a couple $100,000 a month. That's nothing.
Yeah. You know, for five or six more years till that generation. But, you know, no, we don't need to, because, you know, you give them $4,000, you're going to make them rich in the Philippines, and we can't have them being rich. Got it. I know how
to. You remember the argument that I brought out about welfare and for Europeans and the way these people think it's only meant for them. But when other people get it, they kind of.
Yeah, sure.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And this is what it comes down to, you know. Well, for, you know, when it's all white, it's all right. But when it comes for non-white people, then it becomes a stigma and all that stuff.
And if these benefits had been paid per the promise that was made since these veterans got to be payable age, what is $4,000 a month? Maybe $10 a month by the time you sort of sort it all out and reduce it to present value? $5 a month?
Yeah.
I guess the signpost here is that our attitude about this sort of thing is completely upside down.
Oh, yeah.
We're backwards. We're bass-ackwards. I'll have to do some follow-up research, maybe, and find out what General MacArthur's position on all of this was, because, you know, the Philippines was his baby.
Oh, yeah. But pretty much like the descendants of Lord Mountbatten of India, even put their names on the petition to give the Gurkhas their just due.
Well, I wish we would follow... I wish World War II veterans, and maybe they have, would put their names to it, because these were soldiers who were a vital part of the effort of reclaiming the Philippines from the Japanese.
Oh yeah,
and God only knows that, you know, part of the reason they fought was because of what had been done to their families under the Japanese occupation.
Oh yeah,
I find it just amazing, and it's unacceptable. Yeah. Every now and then you see these stories and you, holy crap! Look, there's still people from the Second World War that were stiffing.
Yeah.
And you're just, you know, a little bit amazed.
Yeah. Look at what happened to Joe Louis.
Yeah, that's true. That's true too.
Received his documentary on HBO.
Yeah. So, you know, it just goes on and on and on. There's always some poor some poor son of a gun who can get the wood put to them as long as there's a good, profitable reason for doing it.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. If anybody's in letter-writing mode, this would be a letter worth writing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Kevin, have yourself a good night.
I just wanted to put my 2 cents in on that one.
And it's always a welcome 2 cents. Thanks for providing some level of perspective that the right thing can happen when enough people put their mind to it.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
Okay.
Bye now. No, but as we do pursue this focus, you know, we've got to rob Peter to pay Paul to either take care of our returning veterans or take care of the veterans that we've had an obligation to for 62 years that we have decided to ditch. That's just backwards, upside down, sideways. Headline, you know, we're back in the present now, by the way. Gulf War ills tied to chemical exposure. Analysis, pesticides at root of some veterans' afflictions. Increasing evidence ties pesticides and other chemicals to some, not all, of the Gulf War illnesses that afflict thousands of veterans of the 1991 Bush War I. And these are some stunning numbers. Nearly 30%, fully 30% of the troops who took part in the brief war, have reported symptoms that include fatigue, memory loss, pain, and difficulty sleeping. The Institute of Medicine in 2006 said that there's no single Gulf War syndrome, but that troops who served in the Persian Gulf were sicker than those who didn't. Dr. Beatrice Golum of the University of California, San Diego, did this research. She reviewed 115 studies of neurological symptoms and veterans' exposure to three related chemicals. The anti-nerve gas, anti-nerve gas pyridostigmine bromide, or PB, pyridostigmine bromide, given to troops at the time, pesticides used aggressively to control sand flies, and sarin gas. These are all chemicals that fall into the family of acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. And they all work the same way inside the body. And they are the root cause of a lot of these problems. She found in her research that veterans who are genetically less able to clear this type of chemical from their bodies have a higher chance of suffering symptoms. Oddly enough, she also noted that all of these symptoms are mirrored in symptoms reported by pesticide-exposed agriculture workers. Pay attention to that word, acetylcholinesterase. Acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. ACIs, perhaps? I don't know what the acronym is. But after years and years and years of saying there's no such thing as Gulf War syndrome, guess what? There is. But that's okay. Don't worry. Because we're not going to do anything about it. Yeah, I know. And, of course, you have probably by now also run across the story that says combat troops are losing their hearing. These are soldiers and Marines of the current Bush War who are involved in roadside bombings and firefights, and that they are coming home in what are described as, you know, this isn't liberalsquishynews.com. This is military.com reporting this story. These veterans are coming home with hearing loss in what this article calls epidemic numbers. Permanent persistent ringing in their ears, otherwise known as tinnitus. The Department of Veterans Affairs, there they are again, these poor people who have to do so much with so little, say that hearing damage is the number one disability in the war on terror, please, my aching back. Hearing damage is the number one disability from the Bush Wars. Experts say it could take decades to find out exactly how many soldiers and Marines and various and sundry other service personnel have lost their hearing. At this point, 1.3 million troops have served in either Afghanistan or Iraq or both, and nearly 70,000 of that number are already collecting a disability payment for tinnitus. Another 58,000 are on disability for hearing loss. 10%, that's upwards of 10% of people who have served in those hellish wars, those wrong wars, those sickly started wars have dramatically profound hearing loss. The article is, of course, blaming so-called IEDs or roadside bombs. Are we going to do anything about it? Not much. To the phones. Hi, who have I got?
It's Michelle.
Hey, Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing okay. It's so ironic that this is the subject you're talking on. Because, you know, I've been just laughing at the report that came out about our drinking water.
Oh, that's in the stack too.
I love, and you know, you have these people at, well, parts per million, there's not an effect. And then you've got some other guy coming out, you know, that works for the parks and ranges, you know, park services. And he's like, yeah, the fish, yeah, their sperm count is down. And, you know, they're having a hard time getting a stiffy, you know.
What is that? What's the official term? Is that a fishy?
Yeah. And then here we got, you know, that there's the what is it, the breakdown. What is the chemical affecting the soldiers, the residue from the bullets, the machinery, or the ammunition, right?
Yeah.
What is that?
What are you talking about, depleted uranium or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, are they saying that that's part of it, or is it just the IUD?
No, in those two articles, I haven't seen any mention of it, although I think that's probably going to turn out to be a nightmare of an entirely separate proportion. Because,
so
you know...
They don't associate any of it? No one's associating any of it?
The study on so-called Gulf War Syndrome... looked at those pesticides and one gas and one anti-gas agent.
Okay. Huh. I would figure someone would come out with.
Well, it will, but it'll only come out, you know, when George Bush is safely living in Paraguay or you know something like
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, well.
I mean, how long did it take the veterans of Vietnam? To get the government to recognize that Agent Orange was a killer.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm in the windy area.
No worries.
You know, you're right. I mean, even the Gulf War, I mean, they're still fighting, you know, for assistance and for medical coverage for what they suffered, you know.
Yeah.
So...
And like I said, we're going to find out more and more what depleted uranium has done, not from radiation effects, but because of the toxicity of the heavy metal itself. And
right.
that's a mistake that a lot of people make when they think or talk about depleted uranium. Oh, it's uranium. It's radioactive. Its radioactivity is to the extent that anything's radioactivity can be considered negligible. It's negligible. But it is a heavy metal, and heavy metals are among the most toxic substances on planet Earth to the human body, and they do all kinds of crazy stuff to you.
Right.
And we have, well, and it's also, I don't know if this is the correct scientific term, but it's close enough for government work. It's friable. It aerosolizes very easily. It aerosolizes at the breech of the gun. It aerosolizes at the muzzle of the gun. It aerosolizes on impact with target. And it's you know tiny stuff that is poisonous in teensy tiny amounts, and it dissipates all over the countryside. We have polluted Iraq with depleted uranium, and we've done it since the first Bush War.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it poisons, but it also poisons the soldiers who use it, because like I said, it aerosolizes I mean, if you've ever seen one of those artillery crews, they jam the shell into the breech, they close the breech, they lock the breech, they fire, they pull the lanyard, fire the gun, pop it out, there's still smoke, the shell casing comes out. Guess what? That's not all just cordite or whatever. Some of that is depleted uranium, and it is darn sure coming out of the muzzle, so that people wind up breathing it, absorbing it. It gets in their mouth, it gets on their skin. And like I said, we'll be years figuring out that that depleted uranium is part of the problem. But the other thing is that you can document the use of these chemicals that this one researcher found in the Gulf War I study. And you know, the anthrax inoculations that many people have complained about how sick they were made by them. But we have a government, Michelle, that is geared toward evading liability, because that's what happens when you get Republicans into office. Their first and foremost thought is to evade liability. Look at what the Bush administration has done with the psych profiles of new recruits going into the military. What was it, a year, 2 years, 3 years ago that the story came out?
Hold on, Bob.
That's okay, yeah.
Sorry, the dogs are barking because there was some. She's not home. Sorry, see, you're on the porch with me. The neighborhood kids looking for Elizabeth.
Oh, that's cool though. Yeah, look, that's what this is. We're regular folks.
Sorry.
No, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and I said, part of the reason, part of the charm of the horn is that the hosts are not multimillionaires or $500,000 a year personalities. We're people who live on the ground and live everyday lives, and that's, I think, part of the realness of what we do. But anyway, oh God, where was I?
Well,
barking dogs will always sort of throw my concentration, but yeah, not to worry.
Especially those two. Oh my God, it's like who gets to the door first? And then they look at me like, "What did we do wrong?"
We're doing dog stuff, Mom. It's our job.
But the problem that, you know, I guess, see, that was what was on my mind today about this whole, you know, I'm hearing these people talk this about these two chemicals, pharmaceutical chemicals that are in our water that are, that the process of cleaning the water at the processing plants can't do. They can't get it out of the water. There's no way. It's just.
And the fun part is that the fun part of that report is that nobody's safe. It's in your municipal water drinking supply. It's I got me a well and it's 72 feet deep. It's there too. I mean,
I told you back in the 70s, my mom, her second husband, who was a complete prick. But the one thing he did was test water in northern Missouri, Illinois, and Iowa. He tested groundwater. One of my lucky things was is I got to go along with this guy. That was his opportunity to abuse me. Anyway, that's another topic.
Yeah, that's at least a couple of hours worth probably, but you were saying.
But when he tested the water in 76, in 77, the farming ground well water, you would not believe the toxicity. I mean, he was disgusted. You know, he insisted. He was almost somewhat paranoid of taking a shower and because he knew what was in the water. And there was no way of filtration. And that was just farming toxicity that had gone down to the table, the water table. So, you know, whether you have an artesian well, whether you're getting it off a pipe, you're dealing with toxicity. But with the pharmaceutical, what you have to worry about is not only the fact that, you know, okay, long-term effect, right?
Yeah.
But what if you are a person, and we know this to be true, some people are more sensitive to small amounts of drugs where other people can tolerate a lot. What if you're a person like that? You know?
What if you're horribly allergic to it?
Well, you know, so there's no telling how many people we've lost because, you know, we're not aware. And there's been major scientists that have just been, you know, their lives have been destroyed because they brought this out in the 50s and in the 60s and in the 70s. And, you know, look how many scientists have been, you know, well, some people believe that many scientists have been killed, you know, because of what they were going to put out. So we know that these two drugs that they find prominently, the one for epileptic.
Yeah, there's an anticonvulsant and there's
antidepressant.
Yeah. I knew there was a reason I felt so good all the time.
Drinking all that water. Man, I'm just so mellow. It's almost like I've been eating.
I wonder if the effects are negated by turning it into beer.
You know,
well, I'm really clutching at straws now, aren't I?
You really are. You're just wanting to start up that little brewery, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
Agnes!
She can't hear you. Yeah.
We're going to have pots that are exploding, you know. I had a roommate that made his own wine,
mm-hmm.
and he kept his bat in the bathtub. And it was maybe a month and a half we'd been roommates. And I'm like, you know, okay, he told me about it. But I never understood why he kept it in the bathtub. I thought it was because it was cool or something.
Yeah.
They exploded one time. Oh, my God.
Charming.
Yeah, it's like bloody murder. Anyway, I guess I should get more of a serious note. I guess.
No, that's okay. We don't have to just sit in sackcloth and ashes and weep. I mean, no, not at all.
Well, some of it's kind of humorous in the sense that it's just so sick that sometimes you have to laugh or.
It's that or spontaneously combust.
Thank you. That's it. Really. And I've come close to it. You can ask the dog.
You know what? They do hero service, right?
Yeah. they watch me turn three colors red in the face, you know. I think.
You know, sometimes I get so angry I turn plaid all at once.
Hey, I saw that in a cartoon.
Yeah, let me pick the next color, Yui. Let me pick the next color. He's turning, he's turning plaid. Yeah, stupid.
That's it.
Hey, I don't have any originals. I steal all the material.
That's quite all right, because, you know, if it wasn't for you and stealing material, we'd all forget about that it existed. Wasn't that the two crows with the hat?
No, that's the two mice torturing the cat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Claude the cat that was hopelessly paranoid.
Oh, yes.
And they told him he was sick, and, you're looking peaked, you're turning green. And so the cat turns green, and, ooh, I think you're turning yellow now. And he turns yellow, and this is Yubi and Boit. And Boit says, hey, Yubi, I want to pick the next color. Hey, he's turning plaid. And Bert takes him and slaps him around, but meanwhile, the cat's turning plaid. Oh, the geniuses at Warner Brothers. No, I've got the story right here, Michelle, and it all sort of dovetails. This is Poisoned America evening. Who do you sue? I mean, just in case you think that, no, I don't live there. From Southern California, the samples, 24 major metropolitan area water samples from Southern California to Northern New Jersey and from Detroit, Michigan to Louisville, Kentucky.
That sounds like America to me, Bob.
Well, it kind of does. Yeah, we're all... it's like my friends at Coal River Mountain Watch keep saying, we're all downstream.
And the shit's coming your way.
Yeah, it don't roll uphill, it rolls downhill.
Right.
So you've got, let's see, ibuprofen, acetaminophen, antidepressants, anticonvulsants. Yeah, have another big glass of water, and eventually we'll just sort of stand around in a dumb, painless stupor.
Well, and my question to, I was asking Jim last night, I said, I wonder if there's any, you know, relevance to it in the sense that what comes out of it. I mean, we are drug America, you know.
Sure. Well, dig it. In Philadelphia, Michelle. In Philadelphia, the testing there revealed 56 pharmaceuticals, including medications for pain, infection, high cholesterol, asthma, epilepsy, mental illness, and heart problems. In the watersheds of Philadelphia, they found 63 pharmaceuticals. 18 point, and sorry, I know, you're the gal from Cal, right?
Yeah, go ahead. Right ahead.
Anti-epileptic and anti-anxiety medications. You don't sound nearly calm enough. Anti-epileptic and anti-anxiety medications were detected in a portion of the treated drinking water, for 18.5 million people in Southern California.
Right.
And, you know, something that may explain a whole lot. A sex hormone was detected in the drinking water of San Francisco. The drinking water for Washington, D.C.
A breakdown like this.
6 pharmaceuticals in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas water. And the AP report says the situation is undoubtedly worse than suggested by the positive test results in the major population centers documented by the Associated Press. In other words, we're just giving you the sunshiny part of the story.
Right. Thank you. Exactly. And what amazes me, well, I guess it doesn't amaze me. I mean, hell, if you're on antidepressants all the time, you're probably going to act like nothing's wrong anyway. I mean, you know, we should all, the American people hearing this, with children, people with, you know,
I know. And here's the fun part. There is no federal regulations is bad. There's no federal regulation for the safe amount of pharmaceuticals in drinking water. There's no regulation for it. None.
And that's absolute bullcrap, because there used to be, it wasn't for pharmaceuticals, it was for the chemical makeup of pharmaceuticals.
How about New York State Health Department? The drinking water that goes to New York City doesn't come from anywhere near New York City. It comes from an aquifer way to the north. Well, the New York State Health Department and the United States Geologic Survey tested the source of New York City's water. In that, they found trace concentrations of heart medicine, infection fighters, anticonvulsants, a mood stabilizer, a tranquilizer, and estrogen.
Breast cancer.
Or just breasts for the guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe that whole Seinfeld episode about where Kramer and what's his name, Jerry Stiller argued over whether to call it the Manzier or the Bro. That may be prophecy.
Well, and
I mean, we've got farm runoff into, for instance, here closer to my home, we've got farm runoff from chicken farms in the Potomac River Valley that is so profoundly loaded with so-called phytoestrogens, which are a byproduct of soy,
Right.
That fish are going wild transsexualizing in the Potomac.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, they want to put on heels and put heels on their fins and go sing show tunes. Yeah, you've got males turning into female, ovulating instead of producing sperm. And guess what? It happens. It happens all the way up the food chain.
Of course it does. We have disturbed the ecological balance so severely that, I mean, there was a time that, you know, we might have brought ourselves back. Now, because I think now it's like people are just, they seem to be so idiocracy. I mean, you know, I'm so glad you saw that movie, because it's like, where is the rage? Where is the concern for your family?
But this is part of a piece, Michelle, because way back when I was doing terrestrial buggy whip radio, I had a story that and those who have been with the show that long will probably remember it, because I think I had an aneurysm on the air. Similar to what has been done with drinking water, surveys were done of mothers' breast milk.
Right. Right.
And it wasn't, again, it wasn't simply localized. It was breast milk in New Jersey and Arizona and a few other places. And all of the women's breast milk had components of rocket fuel in it.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
And yeah. It came from lettuce. Lettuce, yeah, that's
the plant. Yeah, that plant absorbed that chemical,
and then passed it along. So, yeah. Because we have a profound need to build missiles that we can shoot into dried mud brick huts in Iraq, little babies nursing at the breast are feeding on rocket fuel, which in turn is probably not good for the developing human brain.
Right.
I went down to Rebecca Chapel in southern West Virginia to hear Robert Kennedy speak, one of the things that he brought up was that every woman of childbearing age in the United States, every last one, rich and poor, short and tall, you know,
yep,
has consumed enough mercury in her lifetime to account for a 7 to 10 point drop in the IQ of any child that they have.
That's believable.
That's America.
Yeah. And that's pretty much, I think you can see that pretty prevalent in the sense of the mass education. I mean, you have a few that are excel, you know, in the written form. But what people don't understand is just because someone has book smart doesn't mean they have intelligence. Intelligence is a whole. It's being able to live in an environment and to be able to analyze all sensory and efficiently and understanding it. Now, you can have the book smart, and you can have the street smart, and you can have the senses, the visual, but if you look at our children, some are strong in visual, some are strong in analytical, some in abstract. You know, they all should be pretty capable with all, you know, in all aspects.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I've had to make the decision with my daughter who has attention deficit. Her attention, I mean, seriously, in first grade, it was, or second grade, the second grade teacher my poor child had a nasty kindergarten teacher that I got into a verbal confrontation with, and a second grade teacher that, like, every so often she'd come to me and say, I don't know if I can pass her on to third grade. You know? Or
what are you waiting? Yeah, lady, what are you looking for, a bribe?
Yeah. You know, you've got kids. I'm sure you've dealt with something like that.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's another three-hour show. We could tell the story of the first grade teacher who made my kids throw their sushi away, but I may have already told that one.
Oh, my gosh. You know, so not only do you have, like, a personality thing going on here, obviously that sounds like your kid's first grade teacher, but then you're dealing with how a child's interpreting information, and you're their parent, and you want them to get that information, so what do you do? Well, I took her to a doctor and had her tested in, you know, outside of the system, and it cost a lot of money, still paying it off. But, you know, it's like she had to go, I have her on amphetamines. I mean, it's sad to say, you know, it's like the lowest amount that she can get by with is 50 milligrams. But what am I doing to her body futuristically, you know? But then again, she's got to get through school because, I mean, what a double-edged sword.
Sure it is. Sure it is. And look at it cumulatively. Let's go back to the mercury business and the IQ levels.
Right.
So the woman with enough mercury to drop her kid's IQ 7 points, and that's not, you know, it's not theoretical, it's certain. Whatever that child's IQ tests out at, had she not had all the mercury in her body, it would have been 7 points higher. You know, maybe it's the difference between a genius and average or high average or whatever. Whatever it is. That kid grows up and has children and is all the while absorbing mercury again and has a kid. And that kid's IQ is 7 points lower than it should have been. Do you see how this accumulates?
Right. Right. So it's
until you wind up with the cast and crew from Idiocracy.
Thank you.
Go away, I'm baiting.
Yeah. That's really, I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but I know in a satirical way, but there was some reality there.
Oh, that was a movie that had to be set in the future, because to set it in the present would have been just a little too real for people to stand.
Right, right. And, you know, a lot of people that would watch that, they'd put it aside. I don't know. There's some people that are watch that and they can't apply it. They can't say, wow, that's satire. But
and there's some people who watch it and don't want to realize that they are, in fact, the next door family who is having the 19 dozen children. And yeah.
Right.
Right.
You know, and so it's kind of like I don't know how I'm going to make this analogy, but it's kind of like the choice of our vote right now. You know, it's kind of like, do you avoid this factor just because you know that we can't have McCain? You know what I'm saying? We all have to do it. I have to avoid the fact that I'm giving my daughter an amphetamine, a man-made amphetamine.
And right. And there's a certain amount of disconnect inside your head about having to do that.
It has to be.
I guess, like you said, I guess we're working a theme tonight. Here's another headline that'll give you the flop sweats.
Oh, shit.
1 in 14 girls has an STD, virus that causes cervical cancer most common, government study finds.
Oh, yeah, I know that one. It's called the human papilloma
virus, right?
Virus.
But that's the HPV. but it includes also syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes, you know.
Sure.
HIV.
Herpes has increased. I used to do a lot of my volunteer work.
Yeah, you know what you get when you have sex with a Jolly Green Giant, right?
No.
Lyserpes.
Oh shoot.
Michelle, we gotta go. We gotta go to the top of the hour.
Yeah, yeah. It's 5 o'clock. I gotta go to karate. You're keeping me from karate.
I wouldn't.
I love you guys.
My apologies. My apologies to your sensei. Tell him not to come and break my door.
No, it's at 5:30. All right, I'll listen to you a little bit longer. I love you, and I love everybody in the room. And hopefully, I'll get to get in there and chat.
All right, thanks so much, Michelle. You take care.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye. Yeah, we'll giggle a little bit along the way. If you don't, you scream, right? Yeah. So we'll take a little break, come back, check on news from Labor Radio, and do hour number three. Is that okay by you? Hope so, because I'm going to do it anyway. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Sex and drugs and rock and roll is all my brain and body need. Sex and drugs and rock and roll is very good indeed. Keep your silly ways or throw them out the window. The wisdom of your ways, I've been there and I know lots of other ways. Jolly bad show. If all you ever do is business you don't like. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Sex and drugs and rock and roll is very good indeed. Every bit of clothing ought to make you pretty. You can the clothing, grey is such a pity. I should wear the clothing of Mr. Walter Mitty. See my tailor, he's called Simon. I know it's going to fit. With a little bit of advice, you're quite welcome, it is free. Don't do nothing that is cutthroat, you know what they'll make you be. They will try their tricky device, trap you with the ordinary. Get your teeth into a small slice, the cake of liberty. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. 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 Sex and drugs and rock and roll.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. It sounds like a story from a different era. Hundreds of workers tricked into working in the shipyards of a country thousands of miles from home, subjected to abusive working and living conditions, with threats of deportation, with no pay if workers complain. But that is what Indian nationals who came to the United States to work at shipyards on the Gulf Coast are accusing Signal International of putting them through. More than 500 Indian nationals are seeking a class action lawsuit claiming the oil rig construction company promised green cards and U.S. residency, but then subjected them to psychological coercion when they complained about crowded living and working conditions. Lawyers representing the workers say the company has violated the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act and the Victims of Trafficking and Violence Protection Act. Most economists are being cautionary when it comes to throwing around the R-word, recession. But the most recent job report makes it even harder to deny that the economy is in some form of retreat, if not yet a full-blown recession. According to the Economic Policy Institute, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported the largest payroll loss in 5 years on Friday. Factory employment fell by 52,000 jobs last month. That's the largest drop since January of 2003. Temp workers also aren't faring very well. Employers let go of 28,000 jobs in the temp worker sector. That's the largest loss in 5 years. And if you are holding a part-time job, while you would prefer to be working full-time, you are hardly alone. EPI reports that the number of part-time employees who want to work full-time is up over 600,000 over the past year. The retail sector was also hit especially hard last month, with more than 34,000 jobs being cut, signaling a slip in consumer confidence. More assembly lines at GM plants ground to a halt on Monday as the United Auto Workers strike against parts maker American Axle continues. GM was projecting that by the end of Monday, 29 plants would be idling, impacting nearly half of GM's North American workforce. 80% of American Axle's business is with General Motors. The parts maker and representatives for the 3,600 employees at the company sat down at the bargaining table starting on Thursday and have been negotiating ever since. The workers walked off the job on February 26th to fight attempts by the company to slash pay from $23.84 per hour on average down to $14 per hour. The plan also includes major cuts to health benefits and pensions. GM says it has a relatively healthy inventory and can weather a 2 or 3 month strike.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Let's go ahead and finish up the water story, if you don't mind, because there's still a whole bunch more to it. This is a rather extensive piece of actual journalism for a change from the Associated Press. I guess they didn't let Matt Apuzzo write this one. The man was railing against the Iraq War in a booklet. Man was killed by a car crossing the street. Throw me down the stairs, my hat. Throw mama from the train a kiss. Please. Sex hormones, estrogens, heart medications. You know, heart medications aren't good for you unless you got heart problems. Antidepressants, anticonvulsants, tranquilizers, sleeping pills, acetaminophen, ibuprofen. Acetaminophen makes me really nervous because that stuff's truly poison on the liver. A couple of fun notes out of this come from some communities that said, yeah, we've tested our water for pharmaceuticals, but we ain't telling you nothing because of 9/11. Huh?
What?
9/11. National security. And, that was, Arlington, Texas. Oh, surprise! The Associated Press also contacted 52 small water providers, little public service districts, one in each state and two each in Missouri and Texas. And they serve populations of around 25,000 people, All but one of them said their drinking water had not been screened for pharmaceuticals. However, officials in Emporia, Kansas, God, it's Kansas or it's Texas or it's Oklahoma. Emporia, Kansas, they refused to answer the Associated Press's questions. They also said 9/11. Sir, do you know if there's any, do you know if there's any estrogens? Yeah, you there, sir. Yeah. You with the 42 double Ds. Yes, sir, you. Do you know if there are any estrogens in your drinking water? 9/11. And the report goes on and says, you know, bottled water's not safe either. And neither is well water. Well, yeah. If you want to know about the well water, come talk to the folks in Mingo County, West Virginia. They'll be happy to tell you about the well water that actually was fairly clean. And they're not getting all broke up about pharmaceuticals lately because the heavy metals and various and sundry poisons that flow out of a mountaintop removal job have burned up their kidneys. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. Maybe when he comes to campaign here in West Virginia, somebody from Printer, West Virginia, can take him a glass of water. Want to have a drink of what we drink? Here, have a big slug, Barack. Yeah, you'll experience change. We've been pissing blood. Sorry, I don't mean to be coarse. It's just what it is. I want this man to change his attitude. I want a clear statement from Barack Obama that mountaintop removal is poisoning and mountaintop removal is murder. No more of this Saudi Arabia of coal BS. I'm sorry, but, yeah, sure, the petty bickering and the infighting and the he said, said, no, she said, no, he said, she said, that crap is annoying. But when somebody starts talking about turning Appalachia into the Saudi Arabia of coal, then it gets personal, and for those of us who live here, it gets deadly. But nobody's water's safe. Users of bottled water and home filtration systems can't avoid exposure. Most bottled water is just bottled tap water in the first place, so that's no help. More than 100 different pharmaceuticals have been detected in lakes, rivers, reservoirs, and streams throughout the world. It's in Asia, it's in Australia, it's in Canada, it's in Europe. It's in the North Sea. It's in the crystal clear blue high mountain lakes of Switzerland. These chemicals permeate aquifers. This is a full-scale assault on life. Well, I'm pro-life. Yeah, okay. Go vote for another Republican who bows and scrapes to, you know, Big Pharma. But you can't blame this all, let's be fair, you can't blame this all on Big Pharma either, because some of this happens because, you know, Americans take their pills and then they go to the bathroom. And it goes into hopefully, a septic system. Or it goes into a public sanitary sewer. Where it's treated and put into the, you know. And then it all goes around again. And when a person takes drugs, you don't metabolize all of them, so some what doesn't get metabolized and doesn't store in the body gets passed out via the kidneys and the colon. It affects not just humans. It affects wildlife. It affects what are called, the animals at the lowest end of the food chain that are particularly sensitive. You know, when you start losing your bats and your birds and your worms and your frogs, you're screwed. The report says, to the degree that the Environmental Protection Agency is focused on the issue, which basically means they're not focused on the issue, to the degree that the EPA is focused on the issue, it appears to be looking at detection. Grumbles acknowledged that just late last year, the agency developed three new methods to detect and quantify pharmaceuticals in wastewater. Grumbles, by the way, is a person. He said, we realize that we have a limited amount of data on the concentrations. We're going to be able to learn a lot more. Some scientists say, yeah, trace, schmace, it doesn't matter. On the other hand, other scientists say that certain drugs or combinations thereof may harm humans over decades because water, unlike most specific foods, is consumed in sizable amounts every day. So that you can shrug off a relatively big one-time dose, but you might go on to suffer from a smaller amount delivered continuously over half a century. Nerve damage, allergies getting stirred up, breast milk. But in Emporia, Kansas, they can't find out about it. 9/11. Same thing with Arlington, Texas. 9/11. Yeah, go get a tall, cool glass. And then, of course, there's the other story on water. Let's just do water tonight. What do you say? This thing hit Sunday. Headline, contaminated water may have affected U.S. troops. You've probably already heard about this. We pay, by we, I mean you and me, taxpayers. Us, the U.S. We pay horse-gagging amounts of money to Halliburton and Kellogg Burn Loot to provide services to our military that the military used to provide to itself before the Republicans decided that the military needed to be largely privatized. An internal Pentagon report obtained by the Associated Press, well, there they are again, concludes dozens of U.S. troops in Iraq have become sick at bases using what is a quote, unmonitored and potentially unsafe water. The Inspector General of the Department of Defense, the Pentagon Inspector General, found water quality problems between 2004 and 2006 at two locations run by, hello, the U.S. military, and three sites run by contractor Kellogg Burn and Loot. I mean, Kellogg Brown and Root. And this was water that was used for washing, bathing, shaving, and cleaning, but not for drinking. The water was smelly and discolored and left soldiers with a number of skin ailments and intestinal problems, but, you know, that still wasn't enough of a signal for Kellogg Burn and Loot. Perfectly good water. What's wrong with your skin, soldier? And in addition to skin ailments, you know, what did Napoleon say? An army travels on its stomach, fights on its stomach? I forget. Well, it's hard for an army to travel or fight with the turtle squirts. Meanwhile, Kellogg Burn and Loot released a press statement, and they said, our water treatment has met or exceeded all applicable military and contract standards. Well, okay. We, of course, wrote the standards instead of, yeah. So we met the standards, and so what if they got a little rash? I keep thinking about little projects that I would like to do somewhere along the way. One of them is to be able to eventually put, and, you know, I'm not going to try to do this for my own profit or anything. It's an act of love. I'll offer it to the publisher for free. I would like to read into some sort of recorded format the entirety of Joseph Heller's Catch-22. Because there is that rolling concept that just permeates the entire book of M&M Enterprises, and the idea that if it's good for M&M Enterprises, it's good for the army, and everybody has a share. Come on, Yosarian, try this. What is that? Chocolate-covered cotton. I'm not eating any chocolate. Come on, try it, please. I got 5 tons of it sitting on a dock in Cairo, and I can't do anything with it. How was I supposed to know the cotton market was in a wreck? So I had cotton balls coated in cotton, chocolate. Please, come on, won't you just take a little bite? No! I am convinced more and more every day that Donald Rumsfeld or Richard Pearl or Paul Wolfowitz or one of those really ignorant freaks read Catch-22 and didn't realize it was meant to be funny. There's nothing wrong with that water. Drink that water. That water cost the taxpayers $15 million to bring to you, and you can drink it, soldier. Wash up. Go shave. What do you mean it makes your skin burn? A question from our buddy Tosh. And it's a fair question. Instead of just writing an answer, I wanted to answer it on air just to clear things up for anybody else. Because a lot of people have. Generally, if I get a question from one, it's a question that's been thought about by several others. Does your objection to coal continue if less damaging methods were found for extracting it? I recognize the exhaust challenges, but what I'm trying to discover is the extent of your sensitivity to coal extraction. I don't know if this is even possible, but I'll never know if I don't ask. Before you get mad at me, I simply don't know enough about coal mining, but I'm strongly on the green side. I'm not going to get mad at anybody for asking a question like that. It's among the fairest of questions. I'm a realist. And I understand that coal isn't going away anytime soon, but according to the reports that I saw out of the Washington Post, us burning coal has got to end in the next 50 years. Or, you know, we can just mail a card to mother and send the chickens down the other side. So, I know that they're going to keep... Let me try to make this reasonably clear in my own mind and hopefully thereby communicate it to others. When you hear a phrase like clean coal, they're talking about what they're going to do to the coal to make the coal less deleterious to the environment when they burn it. That means, you know, whether it's carbon capture or coal liquefaction or any of that other foolishness. But they're still going to get at it under the present scheme, mostly by blowing the tops off of mountains. And by tops, it's not like when you take the little point off of a Hershey's Kiss. No, imagine that Hershey's Kiss reduced by a half or two-thirds. Then you've got what we mean by the top of a mountain when we're talking about mountaintop removal. Anybody who has ever seen Cayford Mountain can give you a much better idea. If you want to see footage of Cayford Mountain, You can either go and get and help the process. Go and get B.J. Goodmanson's Rise Up West Virginia at patchworkfilms.org. .org or .com. I'm sorry, B.J. I forget which. This is all off the cuff. And you can also go to Patchwork Films' channel at YouTube and probably see some of it as well in clips from the film. Coal isn't going away. But there are ways of getting coal, and there are ways of getting coal. My objections are on a variety of different levels. Mountaintop removal, as such, must end, because the manifest damage that it does to the region, both in the short and the long term, simply cannot be justified in light of what the coal companies get out of it. West Virginia is not a playground for the coal industry, even though it has been made one for over 100 years now. At some point in time, this poor little state has got to get away from it so we can find out if we really can survive without it. There are at least 40 other states that get along without coal. Why can't we? But they get along without coal mining and not necessarily without coal burning. If you're going to mine coal, it seems to me that you've got to mine it responsibly, and there is no one with a rational mind who has ever looked at a mountaintop removal operation who believes that that is in any way definable as rational coal extraction. When you fill up thousands of miles of streams and valleys for seams of coal that are sometimes as little as 4 to 6 inches thick, in order to take that coal and then ship it to China? No. There's no way you can justify that on anything other than a pure runaway capitalist profit motive basis. So that's an objection. Why are we raping West Virginia and Appalachia for the sake of China? It's not xenophobia. That's just a simple why. You can't justify the jobs on it because there are only 15,000 mountaintop removal jobs because it is not labor. It is deliberately labor unintensive. So any clean coal that you hear some politician talk about is going to have its roots in mountaintop removal. And that is not clean and never will be and cannot be made so. So clean coal is in fact an oxymoron. It's a lie. Because where it comes from is as dirty as anything can get. Deep mining can be done fairly responsibly. And it is done most responsibly when it is done as a union job, because there is less loss of life, less injury, and less environmental impact. Ultimately, we have to do without coal because ultimately we will be without coal. They're not making any more right now. Or if they are, it won't be ready for a few million years. Maybe the cockroaches will burn it. I'm not trying to be an ass. It's a finite resource. Coal burning, the federal government just bailed out on its next-gen coal-fired power plant in southern Illinois. That thing was supposed to point the way forward. And we threw millions, if not billions, of dollars at it. And then just a few weeks ago, the Bush administration said, okay, we're closing up shop. That's enough. Goodbye. when I think about West Virginia's mountains, if they must be denuded on top to any degree whatsoever, we are far better off denuding them for the purposes of wind-generated power. But no, we can't do that. There's a project in Greenbrier County that you've heard me talk about time and time and time again that would put 400 or 500 good union jobs into play in the construction phase, and then other jobs that there would be good jobs in the maintenance phase. But some people in Greenbrier County who are backed by CSX Railroad and Massey Energy say that their viewscape would be polluted, even though they can't see the windmills, even though you can't see the windmills from the road. The only way to see the windmills would be to go and find the windmills. You'd have to hop over two or three ridge lines, sort of like some sort of great big ant out of the Lord of the Rings, to see them. But the Greenbrier Hotel, owned by CSX, says that it would destroy the natural beauty of Greenbrier County. Oh, Wilbur. Even though they can't see them. West Virginia would be ripe for wind power generation because there's a breeze going here just about all the time. We have kite season when everybody else has still air. Here on the plateau where we live, there's almost always a breeze. If I had a little wind turbine up on the roof, I could get off the grid. Probably have to redo the roof, though. It needs work. So, am I openly hostile toward coal? No. Because generations of my forebears had some sort of a living out of it, and an honorable one at that. But to get it because it's there, to treat it like the line about, you know, why do you rob banks? Because that's where they keep the money. Why do you remove mountaintops? Because that's where they keep the coal. That's unjustifiable. By the way, it is. It's patchworkfilms.com, not .org. Patchworkfilms.com. So I hope that's some level of an answer. And I hope that I've made it clear why it is that West Virginia will never be enriched, and West Virginia, apart from being a barren and desolate wasteland unfit for human habitation, will never be the Saudi Arabia of coal. West Virginia has had its coal extracted since the geologist and pal of Charles Darwin, David Anstead, first identified the seams. They've dug and they've chopped and they've chopped and they've dug and they've burned and they've drilled and they've blasted. And, you know, while my forebears did have an honorable existence, it was not a well-to-do existence. West Virginia's schools have suffered. Appalachia's schools have suffered. Go have a look at Eastern Kentucky while you're at it. God knows our environment and our infrastructure have suffered. Coal has given nothing to West Virginia. Coal has never given a blessed thing. Coal has taken with both hands and the arms wrapped around it, dragging it off the table. The wealth of this nation has gone to Pennsylvania. It has gone to New York. It has gone to Ohio. It has gone to London. And it's gone to Germany, to investors there. But it has never done squat for West Virginia. We've been shot. We've been blasted. We've been run out of our homes. We've been raped by the court system for our lands. and nothing has come back here. With the coal that was extracted from West Virginia during the boom days, West Virginia should never have had to impose a single tax. But the one early effort to impose a severance tax on coal got the governor literally run out of office. I think he was found some years later driving a cab in Chicago or some such. So I hope that's some kind of an answer. While we have to mine it, I want it mined responsibly. We West Virginians want it mined responsibly. And responsibly doesn't mean mountaintop removal. As soon as we can stop mining it, and more importantly, as soon as we can stop burning it, so much the better. That means the scientists have to get on the stick, because there's going to have to be some replacement found for metallurgical grade steel or metallurgical grade coal for the making of the high quality steel. It means a lot of things. It means figuring a way to have a power grid that isn't coal generated, but the power grid's only coal generated because of the laziness of the power companies. They've got the coal-fired power plants, so they're going to fire the coal. It's a hell of a lot easier than trying to figure out how to put up solar, even if solar is thousands and or hundreds of thousands of times cheaper in the long run. You'd think that there would be one accountant somewhere in a power company going, "Guys, this is the best scam I've ever seen. We don't have to buy anything. The sunlight's free." The wind is free. We make the capital investment in the equipment, and then it's all gravy. But, not so much. So it's not the coal I'm mad at. It's the way that it's used and the way that it's obtained. Does that make any sense? I hope so. Thanks. Thanks, really, for the note. Glad I got a chance to elaborate on that a little bit. So, yeah, that there. Yeah, and a couple of little moments of profoundly disturbing information that, no, it's not poison water. By now, I'm sure you have heard, read, seen something about the murders of Eve Carson and Lauren Burke. It's insulting to say that those murders were tragic. Eve Carson at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Lauren Burke down on the plains at Auburn. The accused killer, Courtney Lockhart, has confessed. He said he tried to rape Lauren Burke first. Courtney Lockhart's mother apologized to the Burke family. I can't imagine what it felt like inside the soul of Catherine Williams when she gave an interview to Columbus, Georgia television station WTVM. But she said, "First, let me say I'm sorry to the Burke family for Courtney taking their child. My heart goes out to her family." But she said something else along the way, and this sort of brings us full circle to the Veterans Affairs discussion that we had at the beginning of the program, or early in the program. Catherine Williams said that her 23-year-old son hasn't been the same after serving 16 months in Iraq. He was living with her in Smith Station, Alabama, since returning from the war. I do not ever want to know. And to the extent I pray that I shall never know the grief that resides in the heart of the Burke family. Looking at a photograph of her now, my God, she was beautiful. You can see the vivacity and the energy. Her sisters in the Delta Gamma sorority all testified to what a joyful person she was to be around. She was a Georgia native, Lauren Burke. And Courtney Lockhart was an Alabama native. Courtney Lockhart was a young African-American male. The very sort of prime fodder that military recruiters prey upon. No hope. No future. Come on and join the military. We'll get you skill. You get your skill and you come back and you use that skill and get you a good job when you have the military. Courtney Lockhart was given a bad conduct discharge from the military for, among other things, assault, after having fought in Iraq. In this particular Associated Press story, you only find out that Courtney Lockhart was an Iraq veteran in the third paragraph before the very end of the story. Once again, they buried the damn lead. I mean, really, what else do you call that? Because you cannot, and I don't know if there will be a trial. I don't know anything. I know that authorities in Alabama will, Alabama being Alabama, of course, will make darn certain that Courtney Lockhart's life is given as retribution for his taking of Aaron Burke, or Lauren Burks. Because, you know, that's what they do with young black men who are convicted of murder in Alabama. They just go ahead and kill them. And yet it never seems to decrease the murder rate in Alabama. No matter how many young black men they warehouse in the prisons, no matter how many young black men they lay out cruciform on the table and inject with horrible, agonizing poisons in a horizontal crucifixion, no matter how many times they do that, the murder rate doesn't go down. But God knows, if you want to run for political office, you have to run on, I'm going to be tough on crime, which in fact translates as, I'm going to be tough on the black people. I'm not defending Courtney Lockhart. But when the time comes that they can sit and stand to contemplate how their beautiful, sweet, vivacious, golden, gorgeous daughter wound up at that ATM machine, and how her life intersected with that of Courtney Lockhart, at some point in tracing those divergent paths backwards from the convergence, they will of necessity find themselves in Iraq. and they will, of necessity, find themselves in a recruiting station where a troubled young man meets up with a recruiting officer who is desperate to make his quota. That's all right, son. Ah, so you've been in a couple of scrapes. Well, that's all right. We'll get around that. We can get around that. That ain't no problem. Didn't you hear? The Army done lowered its standards, and we'll take most anybody, long as you can kill. And when that poor, pathetic Burke family reaches that moment, I hope that they will think about George W. Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz and all the other monsters of mayhem who set Courtney Lockhart on the path that would converge with Lauren Burke at an ATM. And none of those people whose names I just ticked off will ever seek the forgiveness of Lauren Burke's heartbroken family who stands left behind here. And I hope that Lauren Burke's family can find it in their hearts never, 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 never to forgive George Bush and Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and Donald Rumsfeld and Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz. Forgiveness is predicated upon remorse. Forgiveness is predicated upon contrition. Forgiveness is predicated upon a desire to be forgiven. And in the world that those slimy animals, Bush and Cheney and Pearl and Wolfowitz and Rice and all the rest of them inhabit, they have nothing to be forgiven for. And that in itself says a mouthful. That in itself says about as much as any human being needs to know about the sociopathic nature of a neocon or a Republican. They have sat in their memorial service for Lauren Burke and they have wept mightily. Perhaps in some introspective moment, they might come to realize that the unseen hand which having writ moves on belonged not to some indifferent creator, but to a very real psychotic monster who lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, whose name is George Walker Bush. I don't see how you can't. Meanwhile, back in Iraq, there's a burgeoning Chuck Norris fan club. And in the Chuck Norris burgeoning fan club in Iraq, they have slogans. Slogans like, Chuck Norris puts the laughter back in manslaughter. Chuck Norris divides by zero. Superman wears Chuck Norris pajamas. The fastest way to a man's heart is with Chuck Norris's fist. That last line can be seen at a shrine in Fallujah, Iraq, that stands at a U.S. military helicopter hub. I'm sorry, it's in Baghdad. The shrine consists of a signed photograph of Chuck Norris, surrounded by some of the other statements that I just shared with you. Puts the laughter back in manslaughter. And people will ask why Lauren Burke died. Lauren Burke died horribly. The same way that so many unassuming Iraqi civilians have died. Because after all, Chuck Norris puts the laughter in manslaughter.
Staff Sergeant Amy Forsyth in Fallujah said, the Marines love him. He's like a mythical legend.
Really?
He's like a mythical legend.
Well, as long as he's only a mythical legend. We wouldn't want any realistic legends. Or non-legendary mythical people. Just another day in the Iraqupation. On and on and on and on. Oh, and by the way, speaking of young soldiers, which we have been, the other day after the sociopath in the White House vetoed the ban on torture, Dana Perineal was asked about the veto decision, because remember, the veto decision would have limited CIA interrogators, and in fact all interrogators, to the standards that are set forth in the Army Field Manual. We've gone over that. It has things like, don't put battery cables on anyone's genitals. It has things like, don't use trained attack dogs on people that you're merely trying to interrogate. Things like, you know, don't dump poop on their heads. And so in describing the Army Field Manual and why it is not applicable to, say, a highly trained CIA interrogator who apparently can't get information without putting poop on people's heads, or waterboarding them, or hooking wires up to their genitals, Dana Perineal said, the Army Field Manual is a perfectly appropriate document that is important for young GIs, some so young that they're not even able to legally get a drink in the states where they're from. Really, Dana? Really? Coming and going. Coming and going. Can't win for the losing. Some so young that they're not even able to legally get a drink in the states where they're from. So, like, we've got to have them, you know, give them a book that's like, you know, torture, you know, with Dick and Jane, you know? And that's like what, you know, the Army, you know, field manual is, you know? Never mind the fact that Army interrogations are generally carried out by junior officers. Is there no end to the denigration that the Bush administration will not subject the military to? Guess not. Guess not. And that rounds things out rather nicely, doesn't it? And that is where we find ourselves at our close this evening. Thank you for putting up with me. I do appreciate it. I hope you'll join us tomorrow night for prayer meeting. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, who's on his way with a brand new, sparkly, Strictly Confidential, America's finest LGBT conversation radio program. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer in Sydney, Australia, on his way this evening with all foxed up at midnight Eastern Time. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, who maintains all of the archives at whiterosesociety.org. If you don't listen live, you can always listen by a podcast or archive at whiterosesociety.org. If what happens here on the Horn matters to you, then what happens at White Rose matters to you. If you've got a little extra and you can contribute this month, especially if you never have before, we sure would appreciate it. That's what the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com is for. It gets a little difficult sometimes operating in a hole. Many, many thanks to all the dedicated members of Coal River Mountain Watch who work tirelessly to create a West Virginia that isn't poisoned, that isn't hopeless, that isn't bedraggled under the great weight of mountaintop removal. You can be a part of the solution very cheaply at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome. Welcome indeed to book, chapter, and verse 123 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Cole.